those families would have their children in the company. There was no question about what Dick Scaife was going to do. He was going to go into T. Mellon and Son. And he was. And only recently he became a publisher, and he bought the Greensburg and another paper in California. The Rockwells, Colonel Rockwell had one son and three daughters. And his son and two of the three daughters, their husbands was at Rockwell. And their children were at Rockwell. And the grandchildren were at Rockwell. Now it's 1960, and that's the way it was. And also with Mr. Machine and the Iversons, that was Mr. Machine's, the Iverson family, they were in the company. Whether they were good or bad didn't make any difference, but they were in the company. And now, that's not the way it is at all. Wait a minute, there was another one. Alcoa. Alcoa was the Hunts and the Davises. And those, everybody in the family was in that, in Alcoa. Today there's only one left. And I think he's got to be retired. Today these companies that are huge and obviously owned by the public, they go outside and they hire from outside. In the old days, John Morris would have never become chairman of Westinghouse because he didn't come from that group of people. He became that group of people, but he didn't come from that. So now you find Jews are also now in these companies, more than just researchers and scientists, which is what they use them for. There are those old Pittsburgh companies that started in Pittsburgh and grew up in Pittsburgh to be international are now run by outsiders, outside of the family. I don't think anybody from the Rockwell family is in the company anymore. No. Willard Jr. died a few years ago. His children are not in it. That's the major difference. And that left it open. If you were capable, and then you could be promoted in the company, and you could become chairman of Westinghouse or U.S. Steel. And that's the major difference. Yeah. And Jews can get into Princeton and Harvard now, and they're fine. And when they come out and they have great grades and they are smart, they can make a name for themselves there. That's the big difference, I think. Because I see these people when they come in for sittings. You know? There's also Equitable Gas. What's his name? Moritz. When did you ever hear of Jews being in the utility business? Right? Yeah. But he's, president. I think he's maybe retired already or something. I think his wife is active in Ladies' Hospital Aid or something, right? Very nice people. But, 50 years ago or 60 years ago, I don't think he could have made it into that company.
No background.
Well, he didn't come from that group. And they like to talk to each other, and I really don't fault them for that because they have enough friends. That's it.
My husband always said you had to be a tutor to get ahead of us.
Absolutely. There is a club called the Iron City Fishing Club that a lot of the Rolling Rock and the Pittsburgh Golf Club people belong to. It's up in Canada. And surprisingly enough, there was an article about it once in Town & Country magazine about 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And one of the things that they really were proud of was that nothing has changed there since 1938 when we put a chair on the porch here, and it still is there. So that's, and that tradition of that, they're proud of that and they like it, and that's it. And now, of course, they need us to a degree, because they found out that we can do the job, and so now they do hire. And there are a lot of Jewish members now at the Duquesne Club. One of the first was, what's his name, from RCA. He had the RCA distributorship in Pittsburgh.
Hamburg.
Lester Hamburg, one of the first members at the Duquesne Club, Jewish. Lots of them now. They do business, we do business. I think that as long as everybody can make out a living, they will take you. That doesn't mean that they want you at their house for dinner, or may not, doesn't matter. But at least we get a chance at that part of the economy, which was really closed to Jews, and that's why there was Montefiore Hospital, because they couldn't get into Allegheny General. So, that's where that is. What's next? The way I was raised in relation to how my children were raised. First of all, my childhood was obviously split. So, up to age 12, you know, in Vienna, there was always a maid, because my mother was never... My mother was in the studio or she was out. We had a maid that cooked and cleaned, and then there was always a woman for the children. My sister and I. My sister was 5 years younger. When this suddenly stopped, and I came to a country where I couldn't ask for water, I couldn't speak the language, that made it... It would be unfair to compare the way I was raised to the way we raised children. Our children are raised in just a normal situation, except that I wasn't home on the weekends. And so it's my wife who was the major factor in forming their personality, if you will, and being the disciplinarian and... So I don't, it's hard to compare that. The biggest shock was when I came here and where's the maid? I mean, you know, there must be a maid somewhere. And then, so.
Let me ask you, how do you view Pittsburgh Jewish life in its place in the general community now?
I think in the beginning, there was a great separation between Jewish life and Pittsburgh life. I would say beginning, let's say 1940, 1950, now there is a greater interrelationship between the two. I can't remember, let's say in 1950, anybody saying we want to wish our Jewish friends a Happy New Year on the television. They just glossed over it as if it didn't exist. Nor do I think Alderdice closed when Yom Kippur came in 1950. And now they do. And now the differences are more accepted because there is a greater interplay between, you know, the Gentile community of Pittsburgh and the Jewish community of Pittsburgh. I don't think that the Bishop of Pittsburgh in 1949 would have thought it was a great thing to have a forest named after him in Israel. And now he loves it. So the acceptance on both sides. I think that quite a few Jewish people that would never have Gentile friends have them now. They're, I think our children have both Jewish and Gentile friends in the normal course of events. Whereas we only, no nice Jewish girl would date a non-Jew in my days. I mean, it just didn't happen. Your mother wouldn't let you go out, that's all. So, I mean, did you date a Gentile? That's right.
Never.
That's right, never, right. And you married the guy next door. I mean, they didn't marry anybody from... So, in that regard, because of... And a lot of it has to do with enormous communication capability today. I mean, you can see what happens in Baghdad while it's happening. They're bombing Baghdad and it's on your television set. So you see more and you know more and there's more to know and more to see. And... both the Gentile community and the Jewish community have made these adjustments. What I am surprised about is, even today, many Jewish people don't know enough about what makes a Baptist. What's the difference between a Baptist and a Buddhist and a Methodist? And they should. And if they knew, if the Baptist knew what the difference is between us and the Buddhist and the, then there would be a greater feeling of acceptance. And sure, there is a difference, but it isn't that enormous. And and it needs, and the young people today are more accepting, I think, and are willing to have both Jewish and non-Jewish friends, and that's good. That's good. I think it's good.
But there has to be a stopgap someplace.
Yes. Yeah, there is a difference. And the difference is?
When it comes to marriage.
Well, yes, hopefully. I think that if the young Jewish people would know more about their own history, and that's where I think the Jewish education, I think, is really important.
It's better now than it used to be.
Oh, yes. I mean, when I went to Hebrew school, we didn't learn anything. Mm-hmm. When I went to Sunday school, we knew very little. Mm-hmm. We had people there who didn't know how to teach. We had people there who didn't know much themselves. They would read the chapter before, and then they would tell it to us on Sunday morning. There are people like Ron Bronner, mm-hmm. who is fantastic, a enormous personality. I've been in several of his evening classes. And there are people there that are truck drivers and photographers and history of professors, and nobody asks the dumb question. And his ability to tell you about your own history that you really should know about, and what does make you different and what makes you unique. Different, not in that you wouldn't accept the other side, but different in that you would know about the other side, but know what your side is too. So if the young people could learn more about themselves, but they should also know about Lutherans, and they should also know about Roman Catholics, and they should also know about Greek Orthodox. And in 1,000 years, they're going to kill each other a little less. I hope.
Yeah.
One more question, if we may. If you would tell us about some of the, you mentioned your patent publications and so forth. Tell us about some of the things that have happened in that respect, the honors and the awards and the patents and the lectures.
Or any publications.
I've written a few articles for the Professional Photographers of America, and it's a national organization that is primarily geared to portrait photographers in the United States. I have a fundamental difficulty with them because I don't like the way they choose their leadership. But I joined a group called the Royal Photographic Society of Great Britain about 25 years ago, and about 20 years ago I was made a fellow in that group, but only at that time there were only 2211 in the world. And it's a good group of people that are from all over the world, that are photographers of all kinds, of, from medical photography to architectural to portraits to nature. And I wanted to see if I could do it. I didn't need it. It doesn't do anything for me. It just hangs on the wall. But I wanted to see if I could achieve the degree of fellowship in the... and I did. And it was fun. I was sponsored by Paul Giddings Sr., who said, well, see if you can do it, that's all. You had to submit works for a 4 or 5 year period, and that would be judged by photographers from all over the world to see if, yes, you are an innovator. And last February, Kodak called together a group of 25 photographers from the United States and Canada. It was by invitation, and they limited it to 25 people. And what they asked of us in Atlanta, and what they asked of us was, what makes you unique in your area? And then they wanted a presentation. So I showed them a couple of things that we do. I make a wedding album that no one else makes in the country because it's difficult. And showed them how it's done. And then they in turn wanted to know, what do we want from Kodak? We wanted certain technological advances. The problem is that a company can't do that unless they can show a reasonable profit by this, you see. But some of us sit there and say, well, that's fine, you know, make your money on amateur films and spend your money on this, but the stockholders don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
So then they published a... from this group of 25, they published a book. And they send it around to about, I would guess, 20,000 photographers, United States and Canada. And every once in a while, someone will call me and say, you know, I read the chapter that on you or the section that you had, and I want to know, how do you do this? And then you tell them, because it's not a big secret. It's just that it's time-consuming and difficult. It's not a secret. And then I don't have my father as a mentor anymore, so I have to be self-critical. You have to look at what you did and say, well, you know, if you did this again tomorrow, what would you change? Because that's what he used to say to me. And I would say to him, well, aren't you ever satisfied? And he said, no. And I said, that's terrible. And now I'm that way. It's disgusting, but that's what it turns out to be. And I'm trying desperately not to say those things to my daughter so she shouldn't have that kind of, you know, feeling that he's never going to like what I do. Yes, I would like what you do. And then everybody has to sort of reach into their own... when you begin this, you copy what someone else has already done. And then eventually you start finding areas of your own. And you, and then your work will have a look or a design that is yours and unique. Hopefully somebody will buy it. That's how we pay Giant Eagle. So,
using that same way of looking, self-criticism for growth, if you were to change anything in your life, what would you do? How would you make it?
In retrospect, what would I change? What would I change? I really wouldn't change anything that I can think of right offhand. Because there was a growing process that you can't skip as you are trying to find your own way in the field. And you can't gloss over it and you say, well, I wish I would not have done this so that I could have spent more time on that. But when I did this, I learned from that to do this. And so I don't think I would change much. I don't see anything that I would have said. Well, I mean, I didn't go out and, you know, buy a group of hardware stores and I said, gee, I wish I never would have bought those. I didn't do that. We didn't do that. Ours is a service business, so it doesn't require a huge amount of money or inventory. It may require a lot of money in the beginning, but you don't need inventory. You don't have anything that goes out of style. You know, I buy these sweaters and nobody wants to buy them. What am I going to do with them? It's not that. We're a service-oriented.
It's an orderly progression.
It is. It's sort of like a florist. Or because a florist will buy the raw materials and design something, and they all buy the same flowers at Pittsburgh Cut, but one gets $5 for an arrangement, one gets $500, it's because what he does with them. So in that regard, it's like that. It's like an architect, whereas you don't need me all the time, but when you do need me, you need me. So how many houses are you going to build in your lifetime? And that's why it's a continuous learning process. It's a continuous building. And you absolutely, if you're interested, then you must keep up. Because if you don't, there are whole new programs, computer programs now, the digital photography, where it doesn't use film, it uses a disc. It's a whole new... and I'm interested. I don't know if it applies to me, but I'm interested. I'm even interested in photography that doesn't apply to me. News photography. Photography that they do without film by the things that come back from the satellites. You know, just fascinating. So, although I can't sell it, doesn't matter. I still want to know about it.
I think we've wrapped things beautifully.
You've given us about everything you can, and we are very interesting.
Well, I'm glad you could come up, and I'm glad everything is better at home.
Yes.
Oh, thank
if
you.
I could have a copy of these, I'd appreciate that, because my daughter Carol would like to
We can get a set of the...
yeah, it's tapes.
It'll take a while.
I don't care.
We'll get it.
No rush. I'll get you the picture.
Yeah.
Or send you a picture to you?
Yes.
Give me the address. Do you have an address?
Thank you very much. We appreciate
my pleasure.
Your time and your
I'm
effort.
Glad you could come up. And
you know, it's an amazing thing. Apart from the photography, you have given us an insight into areas of the community that we would not have normally connected with you.
Because we had an opportunity to get in there. See?
and you made the most of it.
Well, I would find out about them, you know, Old Pittsburgh Society. Thank you. They're there, but their children are different. Their grandchildren, for sure, are, you know, because they're not the same.
I think that the city loses in some respect because we don't have those people who are so involved with city. We don't have the young.
You know, they're different. The companies have changed where they're not all one group anymore, and their children and their grandchildren, you know, they say, we have the stock from great-grandfather, and what do we care? Let's get somebody to run the company who really knows how. You know, Italians, a lot of Italian names you see now. Sure. And because they got a chance at it, too. They never would have gotten a chance. I'm going to pull your plug.